All right, welcome, Earl Verse and Inappropriate Earl fans. You know I'm a big hockey man, and we have to talk about something other than Stormy Daniels and the wars going on. And I have found a man on Twitter who shares my passion for Los Angeles Kings hockey. We've never met. We are literally seeing each other for the first time. So please put your hands together for Stefan Ferratoli.
Thanks.
I mean, we are both diehard King fans. And it was obviously a very disappointing way to end the season. And maybe even more disappointing to hear all these exit meetings where it sounds like not much is going to change. So what do you think the Kings need to do to basically build a roster to beat Edmonton?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've been a Kings fan since Jack Kent Cook was the owner. So to me, you know, they floundered for so long that this is actually the best they've ever been as far as a franchise goes. So, you know, I wasn't as disappointed as all these other fans because I did not expect this team to contend for the Stanley Cup this year. Not with goaltending being like it was. I mean, yeah, Talbot did good, but he's, you know, he got tired in the middle of the season. Then he got his win back. And, you know, it was actually Riddick, who to me is the guy worth keeping now. But, you know, I think that where people don't realize, and I'm not 100% sure, but I think Gabe Vilardi asked for a lot more than $3.5 million from the Kings. His family are Italian immigrants. He's had 20% escrow on his salary for the first 6 years, and he finally had a breakout year, and he wanted to get paid. And to stay in the South Bay, you know, it's going to be $4.5-5 million a year for a guy like that to get a home, to take care of his family and all that stuff. Where in Winnipeg, for the $3.5 million that he gets there, it becomes almost $5 million when he turns it into Canadian dollars. He can buy a luxury condo, buy his parents a home, and take care of his family right now this season, and not have to worry about that anymore. So I think Gabe Vilardi wanted more than at least $4 million. Like he wanted to get paid like Arvidsson and more, and the Kings couldn't afford it. I mean, they didn't have the space for him. So he was a variable cost. And not only was he asking for more money than they could afford, he was going to ask for more in a couple more years. And then they still had Byron, you know, Byfield to satisfy. So what he did, Blake, in my opinion, is he turned Durzi, who was another variable cost, and he turned Vilardi into fixed costs by dumping Iafallo and throwing in a second and Kupari to pay for Iafallo's salary dump. And to me, and he still only could have 21 players on the roster. And I don't care what GMs do. I mean, they have so many restrictions on them with these flat caps that they're going to lose players. I mean, look at all the guys that Tampa Bay has in other cities now thriving. Like, look at Carter Verhaeghe. Yeah. And he was sitting on the scrap heap, the AHL scrap heap 5 years ago. And now he's one of the top five. He's probably the best 5-on-5 player in the NHL that people don't know about. So a lot of teams have lost assets. I mean, look at Minnesota, couldn't keep Fiala because they had not only the flat cap, but then they had to unload those two contracts. One was Parisi, the other one was, I can't remember the other guy. Who was the other guy?
Suter,
yeah.
Other.
So they've got like $15 million in dead cap space in addition to having flat caps. So honestly, the owners, I mean, I understand that they want to get paid back for the pandemic and all that lost revenue, but they self-imposed this restriction on their own GM so that they can't protect assets. So if you ask me what I think the Kings should do right now, it's buy out Drew Doughty. I know that's sacrilegious to Kings fans, but you'd save $7.3 million in salary cap hits. He would get $3.67 million for the next 6 years. He can go wherever he wants for $1.5 million and get over $5 million paid and play for a team that's a contender if he wants. But you know, I'm hearing all these fans complain about blocking assets and blocking young players from playing. Nobody's blocking anybody more than Brent Clark being blocked by Drew Doughty. And Doughty plays 26 minutes a game. So even if you put him on the roster, what are you going to do with the other 34 minutes? So I'd rather keep a solid defender like Matt Roy at that in that top four and move Brant Clark into the top pair. And that'd be the first thing I'd do. Because with the $7.3 million they're saving on Doughty, they can at least extend Byfield. And, you know, if they, I don't know if they have to spend the whole amount on Byfield, but if they do, then do it. But get him longer than just a couple years. For $7 million, you want to get him for wrap him up for 5 years. But,
you know, I think next year, I'm seeing that they're projecting $6.2 billion in revenue for the NHL, which means that $3.1 billion goes to the players. And divide that by 32 teams, it's like $96, $97 million salary cap next year. So next year, I expect a frenzy of free agents changing teams next year. Because, I mean, these guys have been taking 20% escrows. Not this year, but prior to this year, they were taking 20% escrows for 3 years. They're hungry, especially the guys that were playing for the NHL minimum. And Vlardy was one of them. He was making the minimum, and he was getting 20% cut. And then he got sent to the AHL, and he didn't have a bonus that year. So he was making his $70,000 while he was in the AHL. So I'm sure he was financially strapped by that. So I don't blame him for asking for a lot of money that last year. And I think that's what was the poison pill for Blake this year.
Well, you know, I'm in a very rare category of King fan where I actually like P.L. Dubois. I know.
I like him too. I'll be honest with you. I agree. I like him. I have not made a judgment. I remember when I was 16 years old, the Dodgers traded a bunch of players to the Atlanta Braves for one guy named Dusty Baker. And he was a bust that first year. And everybody was calling him names. They were calling him the toy asshole because the toy cannon got traded for him. So they called him the toy asshole. And then he became one of the greatest Dodgers of all time. So I'm willing to give Dubois, some slack on this first year. And I hope they do promote him. He should be the 1C. Bring Kopitar down to 3C. Let Kopitar work with these young kids, like Fagimo or Akil Thomas. Put one of those guys on his wing. Put one of the other guys on I got Dubois in my head and I can't remember Deneau. Put Thomas with Deneau, put Fagimo with Byfield, put Fiala with Dubois, and put Moore with Deneau. So instead of having Arvidsson there, I think Akil Thomas would be a good replacement for Arvidsson. Probably not as good, but I like his upside. I think he's very versatile too. So the only question is his health, right? Because he's had three shoulder surgery. Right. So, but well, I think the AHL is a lot more brutal than the NHL for that stuff. So, I don't know.
I mean, I think, you know, I definitely have concerns about Dubois. Like, no one really saw this but me, but I studied this guy because I'm a fan. And so I said, okay. Yeah, but I'm also a fair fan. Like, and there was a play in the first home game against Edmonton. So game three. Where toward the end of the game, Bouchard was basically punking Dubois in the corner. He's giving him the face wash. He's giving him the baby jabs. And Dubois looked like, just hit me. Let's get this over with. Someone come in and break it up. That concerns me. You know, it just, and I went to a few home games this year. You know, like I went to the Seattle game where he had the three assists on Moore's goals. And that game is like, this is the Dubois we're paying for. Like, he was hungry on Moore's third goal, which was the breakaway goal late in the game. Dubois made the play by diving for the puck because he knew if he could chip it to Moore, he'd get, probably get him the third goal on a breakaway. And then the next game, he looked like he was on a bag skate. Like, just, I've never seen a player play so much with one hand on their stick, you know, and I've watched a lot of hockey. So, and, you know, what concerns me with him is, you know, in Columbus, he had a problem with Tortorella. I should say Tortorella had a problem with him. And he gets a pass because, well, Tortorella is kind of a dick with younger players. And then he goes to Winnipeg. And it's not like Rick Bonus is known for being chummy with players. So, all right, maybe it was Bonus. But then, you know, you come to L.A., you have a disconnect with McClellan, who, you know, he's not known to be a player's coach, but players do seem to like him. And then you fire him and you bring in Hillier. And now he's got a problem with Hillier. So, you know, at some point it is on Dubois. Like, this is now four coaches you've basically had a clash with. But I, what bothers me is that we weren't going to beat Edmonton with Vilardi and Iafallo either. Like, people are, I think Dubois gets too much of the blame, is my point of that diatribe. What say you?
Yeah. I mean, I still remember what he did to Tampa Bay 5 years ago. And I mean, that was shocking to me. And he was like 19 at the time. So I don't know. I didn't get to see a whole lot of him when those, his first few years, I really didn't see him a lot till this year. I was definitely expected more grit and more muscle. But again, I'm willing to cut him some slack for the first year, learning a new system, being around new players. I mean, it's not like Kovalchuk, where I honestly believe they hated Kovalchuk in the locker room the whole time he was there. And the Kings management kept saying, oh, they love him. They love him. He's, I thought that was bullshit. But I do think that Dubois fit into the locker room, but yeah, he needs to put up more, but also the system needs to adapt to him as well. I agree with Blake on that. So I was never in favor of hiring McClellan in the first place. The guy I wanted, nobody's probably even heard of, but I actually wanted an AHL coach named Ben Grew from the Syracuse Crunch, right? Because I saw what he did for Tampa Bay's prospects that were going into the system in the late 10s, you know, in 17, 18, 19. I mean, he was sending them NHL-ready guys. And then even after they started trading draft picks, Ben Grew was developing guys out of college that were undrafted free agents and getting them into the NHL. And, you know, he's got a son that plays for the Ducks. And I thought he would be perfect for the Kings, just like Cronin, I think, is really good for the Ducks and younger players. But they went with McClellan, and then it seemed like they went bargain shopping for guys that teams couldn't protect in the expansion draft, and free agents that teams couldn't afford. And I thought those were good moves. But you got to have money, and the whole league is tight now. So if guys want to go free agent, I'm sure there's plenty of losing teams that are willing to sign Arvidsson and Matt Roy, but they're not going to find that kind of money on contenders. They're just not going to find it. So they're going to have to go to the losers, like whatchamacallit, Killorn went to the Ducks, got his money. And Palat went to the New Jersey Devils, and he got his money, but they're out of the playoffs. So, I mean, it's going to be like this for another year, I think, because the $4 million is just, even though it does alleviate some of the pressure on the GMs, it's not enough. So to me, if the Kings really want to make their mark now and get that goaltender, they got to let go of Doughty. And they probably got to trade their first and second round pick to get a guy like Ullmark or another goalie who's right there. But to me, Ullmark is the prize, because Jeremy Swayman's going to get paid.
Yeah.
He's going to get paid. And so they're going to be looking at $13, $14 million for two goalies, and one of them is a free agent. By paying Big Swayman, they're saying you're our number one going forward. And they've already said that in this year's playoffs. So I don't know if I believe the rumor that Allmark turned down a trade to the Kings. If he did, well, let's see what he does when he realizes he's no longer the number one goalie and he needs an extension right now. So,
well, I had heard through a few, I hate to be that kind of hockey fan. It's just, well, I have sources within the team, but I actually do. They had told me that rumor was false, that Dubois was never offered up for Allmark. And it's funny, you bring up Kovalchuk, which I'm another rare fan. I was in favor of the signing, and I still am, because it did not work out. But, you know, when you look, and it, this has something to do with Dubois, you know, Kovalchuk's first season with the Kings, I think he was fourth on the team in goals, but 17th in playing time. So you knew what you were getting when you signed him. You know, we needed goal scoring. He was really only free agent. We couldn't do a trade because that's kind of like, well, you're replacing an apple with another apple.
I wanted to sign. Who was the center that signed with St. Louis from?
Asian? The guy from
Toronto? From Toronto. What was the guy they signed from Toronto? Long time Maple Leafs. My head is not in the right place right now. So,
no, I know who you're talking about.
Right? He won the cup with St. Louis his first year.
It wasn't Stajan?
No.
But I mean, like, if you look at like Kovalchuk's production, you know, even in the second season, he wasn't horrible. But, you know, at some point he had problems with three coaches with the Kings system. And yes, I am counting Desjardins. But I just, and I had heard he was well-liked in the locker room. But, you know, it didn't work out. But, you know, I think Dubois, you know, it's a big year for him next year.
Tyler Bozak.
Yeah, you're right. I don't know why. I mean,
that's the guy I wanted the Kings to get, because Carter had that slice on his calf muscle.
Right.
And he wasn't the same for a couple of years, and he was never a center again. And I just felt that Tyler Bozak could, at least, even though he wasn't a true 2C, I thought he could have played the full 200 feet and fed apples to guys, you know, to the 70s line instead of, you know. But as far as Kovalchuk goes, I was watching stats nightly, and every time every line, they're moving him different lines. Every night he got to a different line, all the guys on the line he was with had minus, you know, minus two, minus three on their stat line because he didn't play defense.
And well, I was okay with that. Like, I mean, you know, if you look up the season before, they'd lost 4-1 goal games to Vegas in the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, he was, without subtracting anyone, exactly what they needed. Now, it didn't work out, so obviously I was wrong. But, you know, I watched him like I did Dubois. You know, he played the body. He wasn't like Peter Klima cherry picking. I think the problem with Kovalchuk ended up being, and I really noticed this about him, you know, versus when he was in Jersey and Atlanta, he's not really a winger. He's more of a rover. Like, he never was in the same one shift. He'd be below the goal line on the left side. The next shift, he'd be in the faceoff circle on the right side. And I thought him and Kopitar would have great chemistry. I just imagined Kopitar feeding him because he still had the shot. Slower, yes, no doubt about it. It's that Beverly Hills lifestyle. He was actually my neighbor.
But well, he got paid. That's the most important thing for him, is he got paid.
Oh, no doubt. But and by all accounts, he was well liked in the locker room because he's like a workout freak. And
is he? Okay.
I mean, you see him even now in the KHL. I think he's a coach or maybe an owner. He's pretty jacked. So I think at least by his teammates, his deficiencies were tolerated, where with Dubois, it's like, bro, like, your effort level needs to step up. And at this time, like we said, it's four coaches, three teams. You're only 25. Like, you're about to get your GM fired because they did trade a lot for him. Like, personally, I miss Iafallo the most because he's so dependable. But
yeah, but he wasn't worth $4 million. That was a problem.
No, I get it. And, you know, I just don't like how a lot of King fans, and we all love King fans, we're a very passionate fan base. But it's this narrative that Dubois is the reason we lost to Edmonton. It's like, no, the goaltending wasn't great. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't great. And the penalty killing wasn't there, nor was the power play. Now, you might say that's a little bit on Dubois, the power play anyway, but he's not really on it a lot. And, you know, listen, I don't think we beat Edmonton under any circumstance, but the refereeing in that last game was brutal. I don't know how you call a hold on Dubois when he had both hands on a stick. Like,
yeah, I agree. I totally agree.
And the last thing I'll say, and then I'll let you talk the rest of the interview.
No, it's okay.
No, because it just blows. I was talking with my friend who's in town for the comedy festival. He's from Edmonton. And he even asked me, do you think Fiala dove? And I'm like, there's no way he's going to pass up a free shot. I mean, he had a free shot if he were. Right. And he was telling me the ref is called Fiala. That particular ref had an issue with Fiala diving. And it's like, okay, I don't think he dove. But if he dove, then Draisaitl backflipped on that Dubois call. Yeah. Now, it's not why we lost the series, but it didn't help, to be honest.
It looked like Fiala was just trying to get his feet underneath him. Like, he got tripped. He got tried to leap up and get his feet underneath him, and he just couldn't do it. But that was no way he was. That was, you know, that was not embellishment. In my opinion.
I mean, that was terrible. I think he's one of the best players shot wise from 15 feet and in. And he has a great shot. There's no way he dove to try and get a call when he basically had a mini breakaway if he could have gotten to the puck. Here's my biggest concern going into the offseason, because I know last year that the Kings in the summer through one of my Matt Drudge-like sources on the Kings, he had told me they had kicked the tires on Tom Wilson. Now, this is before he signed a big extension.
Yeah.
To me, that's exactly what we need. And you're not going to get Tom Wilson, and I don't know who's available, but we got bullied again for the third year in a row by the same team. And I don't mean fighting, because that's dead for the most part. Yeah. We need more grit on that fourth line. And Grundstrom, I think, would be a great compliment to a dick like a Hathaway, hell, even a DeLaurier, anybody. We're not going to get Rempe. That would be my fantasy, but he's not leaving. I mean, and once again, I don't mean fighting, but we need a guy who is an a-hole, and we haven't had that in a long time.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, I don't see any of the guys down in Ontario, California, the Ontario Reign, coming in and being fourth liners. I mean, there's no way I'm putting Fugimo or Turcotte. I mean, Turcotte might be able to center the fourth line, but I'd rather put those guys in the top nine and then spend, if you have any discretionary dollars, go out and get fourth line grinders that are specialists on the PK as well. So that can, you know, that are physical on the boards. But yeah, Blake has his work cut out for him, and he's still not going to make everybody happy next year, because again, he's only got so much money to work with. And if he doesn't buy out Doughty, it's going to be the same again, in my opinion.
I mean, I know he wasn't the answer, but I almost said Jocelyn Lemieux. That I'm dating myself with that reference. But I loved that fourth line 2 years ago with, I think it was Lizotte, Kaliev, or Grundstrom, depending on which one, and Lemieux. I mean, Lemieux was a guy, like, I know he wasn't well-liked by the team from what I have understood, but he was that guy who would, like, bump into McDavid and like, start scrums. And, you know, we need a guy, I think, on the fourth line who plays sometimes over the line.
But he was fragile for that role. I mean, he was injured a lot last year. So, I mean, yeah, I agree, but he couldn't stay healthy. That, because he's just not built, in my opinion, for that role 82 games, you know? So,
yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know, I should have researched. This was a very last minute podcast. But you know, I've always wanted to talk to you because I you're opinionated, and I just think that even with goaltending, we're gonna have to dumpster dive again, to be honest with you. Like, I could see us. I'm not trying to start a rumor. I just, you know, I saw a guy wearing a Spencer Knight shirt last night at the Panthers game. I'm like, that'd be an interesting guy to take a flyer on. Not at your number one, but like a reclamation project. I mean, the Russian kid who's probably not going to go anywhere in Nashville because he was a pretty high Askarov, I think. You know, I mean, Soros is there. I don't see this kid coming in anytime soon to be the backup. We're going to have to get creative. Rob, you're right. Rob Blake is going to have to get very creative this offseason because, you know.
Omar is out there. You got to take a swing on him, I think.
And I mean,
you might have to trade some draft capital, like your this year's first round, next year's second, the following year's first, to nab him. I don't even know if that's enough for Boston because Boston needs centers. And that's why I just can't see Boston giving him away if they don't get a center out of it. But
I mean, we do, like, I'm heartbroken. Like, I'm a huge Kaliev fan. And I do think he's been, you know, we talk about Dubois maybe not being set up for success in terms of line mates. I mean, I don't know, playing him on the fourth line was just like, nothing against Lazat and Trevor Lewis, but like, come on, it's not going to showcase. And like, Kaliev to me is, he's going to thrive somewhere. I know it. You know, I know you've caused a lot of heat on Twitter with some of your opinions. I got almost kicked off of Twitter for comparing Kaliev. I'm almost scared to say this because I know King fans are going to listen to this. I see some similarities of Kaliev to when Brett Hull was in Calgary. And I don't think Kaliev's going to be a 700-goal Hall of Fame player, but you know, some of the same critiques of his skating and effort and fitness level. You hear that about Kaliev. That's why he went to the second round, was, you know, his effort level's not the best.
From what I remember, it was his maturity level. There was some really tough criticisms on him where some of the scouts under their breath were saying had the mentality of a 14-year-old, right? So I'm thinking about, you know, the movie Slapshot with the guys playing with the racing cars on the bed. Right. That's what I thought of Kaliev. So because his interviews did not go well in that combine, but there's no doubt he's got the shot, and he actually can pass too. So again, defensively, I don't know if he's there yet.
I studied him too. I always seem to study the players I like who everyone hates. And his effort level, you know, there were some plays where he would do the famous, I call it the Sandstrom swipe, you know, the one hand, he'd try and like either do a one hand slash or poke to get the puck. And if he didn't get it, he kind of gave up. Like, you know, he got discouraged. And I think for him, it's more mental because I remember his first year in the league. You know, this is a guy who scored 50 goals, I think, 2 years in a row.
In the OHL, yeah.
Yeah, and he someone set him up for the Ovechkin shot in the circle, and I think he was playing against Darcy Kemper, and Kemper didn't even move and made a routine save. Like, it was virtually no effort on Kemper's part, and you could tell Kaliev had never experienced that before. Like, a year ago, that puck would have gone by a goalie with acne. And I think he's experiencing like, it's not just having a heavy shot I've got to do more. I think he's struggling with, he's never not scored goals in bunches. But you're playing against the best goal. Even the backup goaltenders are good in this league. So, I have a feeling he's gone, probably putting a package for a goalie. I mean, someone on Twitter today, might have been you, maybe mentioned you've got Spence, Kaliev, and picks as some kind of a trade capital.
I wouldn't trade Spence, not me.
I don't want to trade him. but I think I'm also in the minority. Yeah, everyone was like, call up Clark. We need Clark's offensive skills against Edmonton. But I think Clark, at least right now, would have been torched by McDavid. Like, I don't know if he's defensively ready for the NHL. Now, maybe next year he will be, but I don't think calling up Clark would have helped us this year
in the playoffs. I mean, again, if everybody's complaining, there's a lot of people complaining about blocking prospects, but I mean, if you're talking about who's your tough prospect, it's Clark. All right. So are you going to let Doughty continue to play 26 minutes? Are you going to squeeze Clark into the top four? And I don't feel like he's top four. But I'm okay putting him in that top spot if he's going to be a playmaker, the number one playmaker. And I think that's where he needs to be. And you're going to have to let him grow and make mistakes and learn from his mistakes. But if they keep Doughty, then they barely have enough cap space to re-sign the guys that they have. And it's going to be tight again. And we're not going to be able to carry 23 players, maybe 22. But, you know, if you're going to use LTIR as your fallback plan again next year, then prepare to be disappointed, because you can't make trades at the trade deadline because everybody's on LTIR. And that's what happened. So you didn't know when Arvidsson was going to come back. And you knew if you'd have put Fagimo and Thomas and those guys in and they stay more than 10 games, now you got to put them through waivers again when Arvidsson comes back. So what do you want? You want asset management? Because everybody's complaining about asset management. That would have been the worst asset management.
Right.
So, you know, it's not all the GM's fault. It's, you know, the Kings decided to become a tear down, a rebuild through the draft team, and 2 years into that plan, a global pandemic hits, where those guys can barely get 20 games on the ice. They're in quarantines. They can't have no social life. They're supposedly living their dream, and there's psychological issues as well behind all of that. And I'm not trying to make excuses for the Kings, but it did not. I think there's going to be a lot of guys that were drafted in 2017, 18, 19, and 20 drafts, and even afterwards, that are going to emerge at the age of 25, 26, 27 because of the stunting of their development during that pandemic.
My opinion. I mean, that's, I think, what hurt Byfield early on. You know, even before his broken ankle, you know, he just, although I thought, you know, him playing in Ontario when he probably shouldn't have been, I thought that might benefit him because he's going to be playing against men. But it, you know, I don't know. You know, he was,
the OHL was shut down, so he had no other options, right? I mean,
I thought that was, like, in a weird way, oddly beneficial for him, because he's going to, okay, you're not going to learn much in the OHL. Like, you peaked, and like, I don't think you're going to learn anything new. You're going to dominate, and then you're going to be thrown to the wolves. So I didn't think playing in the AHL was the worst thing for him. But, you know, I'm looking at it right now with no inside sources. I'm assuming we're going to lose Roy and Arvidsson, which would open up the door, I'm assuming, for at least Fagimo and Thomas and Clark. I'm an England fan, but, you know, if we take him out of listen, is he the greatest player in the world? No, but like, he
might be 200 times in a season.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't, you know, you can't have every player be a goal scorer or superstar. You know, he fills a void of the perfect sixth, seventh defenseman. You know, he is a guy who I think he's the only guy in the Kings right now who, when he steps over the boards, you're like, number five's out there, heads up. And he's pretty clean. You know, we haven't had a guy like him probably since McNabb. I know we didn't have room to get him, but I thought he would have been perfect for what the Kings needed. Was Gudas. Like, that was the guy I really wanted, because I'd be all right. I mean, I don't think you could afford to pay him $4 million, but I mean, the Kings couldn't. But that's the guy who I thought, before he signed with Anaheim, you pair him with Clark, and Clark's good to do whatever he wants, because no one's going to mess with that kid with that number seven basically as his security enforcer.
Yeah. I imagine you're going to see England in the AHL next year, because now that he's on the second year of his contract, I don't know that the Kings plan on keeping him long term, but I think this year they kept him up there because, you know, they were afraid somebody was going to claim him.
I mean, with Grundstrom especially being hurt, I think you had to keep England. Like, we got, because I don't want Kempe in the scrums. Like, and he's more than capable of handling himself, but he's your best player, your best goal scorer anyway. And he's very willing to get into the scrums, but I don't want him in the scrums. I don't want Clark, you know, who in his few NHL games I've noticed he gets hit a lot. You know, this ain't the OHL anymore. Like, you got guys like Tom Wilson and Rempe now, who's actually a fairly good skater for his size. Like, you need, like, not a goon, but you need someone who will be like, you're not going to hit him, or I'm going to hit you, or I'm going to hit your best player. You know, so I
well, the mayor's touting Andre Lee and Sam Hellenius. I mean, Andre Lee is a college player who's now played out his ELC, and he is no longer waiver exempt next year. So maybe there's room for him on that fourth line, or is the 13th, or, you know, I won't even say 14th forward. I don't see the Kings carrying 14th forward next season, but hopefully they can carry 13-7-2. So hopefully.
I mean, Lee, I watched the games. Did you watch the Ontario game Sunday?
Yeah. I got the AHL TV.
Yeah, I mean, I've got Channel 9.
Oh, yeah. All right, yeah.
Boy, I'd love to know what the ratings were for Channel. I mean, they must need the programming to televise an AHL game, but I'm glad they did.
That was good.
I mean, I know we have that kid. Is it Holton Zimmer?
He's in the WHL.
I mean, I know he's not going to play next year for the Kings, but from all reports, he is.
He's eligible to play in Ontario next year. Yeah.
But I mean, from all reports, he is the type of player I think we both agree, you know, he's a Marchand type. And I'm not saying he's going to be as good as Marchand, but like, he is a guy who starts the scrums and sticks up for his teammates. And I think I don't see Lee and Hellenius in that role. They're certainly big bodies, but, you know, I mean, we might as well call up David Steckel from retirement if we're going to. An old school reference.
Zimmer is interesting. Is he going to join the Rain? Because his season just came to an end yesterday. So he's under contract. He could technically be in Ontario at Toyota Sports Center Training Center now if he wants. He's eligible.
I mean, by all accounts, his work ethic is great, and like, he's more than willing to stir the pot, which, you know, I would love to see eventually someone like that on the fourth line. And you know, I'm assuming we're going to lose Trevor Lewis too, but maybe not. He's a cheap option for the Kings, I guess. Although I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up in Utah, which is weird to say that now that they are,
I don't have any regrets for the Kings to signing Trevor Lewis. I thought it was a good signing. He's a good fourth line player. People are saying he was blocked. People are pointing at him for blocking prospects. And I'm just like, which prospect would have been better than Trevor Lewis on a fourth line role? I didn't see anyone.
I mean, I would have liked to have seen Fagimo. I'm not saying I expect him to match his goal pace in the AHL, but I never really understood the love affair with Anderson Dolan. Listen, by all accounts, a great guy, loved by the organization, Ontario and LA. The effort level was never not there, but I'm like, we need goals. Like, why isn't there's something going on with Kaliev? I want to know. Like, either he practices bad, he's lazy, or there's something why he was not given a shot, basically by McClellan and certainly the new coach. Like, they almost seem to go out of their way to not use him. So I really hope one day either the mayor or a good buddy Dennis Bernstein or somebody goes, this is why they didn't use Kaliev. this was going. It just makes no sense to me.
I doubt we'll ever know. I doubt it.
But don't, like, there's got to be something we didn't know was going on. For you've got this, maybe the best goal scorer in his draft outside of Caulfield. And I don't mean Jay Caulfield. That's for you old timers listening. I've never seen a hockey player wear a football neck brace before, but I think Jay Caulfield had literally started skating at 16. So it checks out. But I don't want to beat the Cali of horse too much more, but I'm just so curious as to, there had to be, like, even in Edmonton, you know, when you're down 3-1, hey, we need goals. Let's throw them in there. Maybe something happens. I don't know. I mean, so it'll be interesting what happens with him, Lewis, Roy, and Arvidsson. Like, those, you know, that frees up some cap space, I guess.
I think Kaliev is going to get traded on draft day for a middle round pick. You know, the Kings could use a few more picks. I think they have a first, a fourth, a sixth, and a seventh, or something like that. So they're probably looking for draft capital from Kaliev. I think that's all they can get. They can't take on salary. I mean, unless they get a guy that's near minimum and can play fourth line. But yeah, I think he's gone.
I mean, I wouldn't mind throwing him to Philly for Delorier, but I can't. I'm not trying to make up trades. I could see something like that, but I can't imagine Kaliev and Tortorella vibing. Like, that's like, that ain't happening. Well,
I think Fagimo is going to get the shot that Kaliev got this year, because of his shot. I mean, he's got a world-class shot too, and it's right-handed instead of left-handed, so it gives the Kings a little more flexibility there, because they certainly could have used another right-hander in the lineup. And now they're going to get two with Akil Thomas and with Fagimo. So, I mean, they could actually balance out their lines really nicely. I think both of those guys can play middle six, right wing or left wing, whatever. But it's time for those two guys to get their shot, and also for Turcotte to get a shot. And I don't know if they're going to try to put him at the wing in the middle six, or if they're going to, because I would give him that shot too. But I think he can actually play the 4C, but yeah, he's going to need some protectors on that line, right? He's going to need a guy that's going to make, you know, watch his back. And I don't know that they have that. And Andre Lee, I don't think is the answer this year.
No.
I think Hellenius and Lee, I think, have some potential, but maybe they're a year or two out. So I don't know.
I mean, I love Turcotte. It's just the poor guy, like, just, you know, he's like Velarde. Or, for you older fans listening, I mean, of course, my favorite player of all time was Barry Beck. And it's just, now Beck was a mountain of a man, just couldn't stay healthy. Like a workout freak, but he had bad knees since juniors. And then, of course, the Flatley hit, shoulders finished him. Like, so if Beck can't stay healthy with his body, Turcotte, who is smallish, by today's standards, like, you just feel for the guy. And that's why I like Velarde so much. Like, you just,
he was my favorite player. Velarde was my favorite.
Oh, I mean, that's, you know, like, the guy tried for 5 years to get his situation right. And, you know, so I had no problem with Velarde's effort. He didn't seem that unhappy to leave LA. I know he took a shot at us fans.
I actually agree with everything he said. I don't have a problem with anything he said. It was kind of refreshing to let him speak, and Winnipeg definitely let him do that. So, I mean, that was a sanctioned press conference with the Winnipeg Jets logo in the background. So,
no, I mean, I don't know. I understand what he's saying. I mean, I've been to Winnipeg before, doing comedy, and like that, I've never been in a city where that whole city is Winnipeg Jets. Like, you go into any bar, the bartender's wearing a Jets jersey. You know, when I got to my hotel room to play the comedy club, they had a game used Skakel Winnipeg Jets jersey made up for me. Like, or game ready, I should say. I never played for the Jets. So I could understand why you would. I mean, now granted, you got to live in Winnipeg, which is like when I was there, it was minus 21. That's why I love Iafallo's like a big surfer. And like, he must have picked up a new hobby.
Buffalo, right? He grew up in Buffalo. So, you know, Iafallo is adaptable. He's just an outdoor guy. And so I can't snow ski or I can't snowboard. I'll just to get a surfboard. But I, from what I understand, he is enjoying the outdoor life up there in Canada. And Velarde is the same way. He's a Canadian. He grew up in a very humble family that didn't have a lot of money, and they made a lot of sacrifices to put him and his brother through hockey academies. And I mean, he was a prodigy at a young age, and he went through growth spurt, and he had that adolescent injury from his bones not being fully developed and overuse, shooting the puck too much. And that did set him back for 2 years. But I think he's the Magic Johnson of hockey eventually, because the way he can pass with no look and between his legs and do stuff, and he plays to his teammate. He understands his teammate's strengths, and he makes them better. Because I saw that immediately when he came to the Ontario Reign. That team was struggling, and all of a sudden, he turned their season around by just being who he is and not even being part of the system. Stuther said, hey, just go do your thing. And he did. And he was great. And everybody was the Ontario Reign fans were so disappointed when he got promoted to the Kings, because they thought their playoffs hopes were dashed by that. And then we had the pandemic. So, yeah.
Oh, no. I mean, he definitely, that's the only thing I think that hurts Dubois is when you look at Velarde's effort level.
Yeah.
And then you go, okay. Even fans who, all right, we're okay trading Velarde, but Jesus, bro, you gotta try a little harder, number 80. But we got him now for the next 7 years. So here's to year two. Get your act together, PLD.
It's crazy to try to talk about a buyout of a guy who has $59 million and 7 years left on his contract. And $12 million of it is in signing bonuses, which is buyout protected. So I mean, I'm shaking my head at all the people that want to fire Blake and buy out Dubois. It's crazy right now.
I mean, I understand the frustration, like, but I think you and I, and there are a lot of reasonable fans out there, but like, you know, I think that you don't really understand that this isn't fantasy hockey here. Like, there's ramifications. Or, oh, let's just get rid of Dubois. He didn't play good. Well, it's a little financially irresponsible to do that. And I, you know, his pattern, I'll give him this, is in year two, he dramatically improves on every team he's been on. You know, in Columbus, there's a huge jump, Winnipeg. And so, I mean, he is very important to this team's future. Whether you like him or not, he's here. He ain't going anywhere.
And think about it. When the salary cap hits 100 million, 105 million, 110 million in 3, 4, 5 years, that $8.5 million is going to be so cheap. And they got it on a fixed cost for 8 years. So yeah, if he can live up to his potential, that's going to be a great contract. Same with Fiala. And when Doughty is retired and Kopitar's gone, I mean, that's $18 million in cap space that they're going to have to sign a star free agent if they have to. So I don't know. When you're dealing with what the salary caps are and stuff, you got to like think the next domino, the next season and thereafter. So I was real fortunate that 20 some years ago, I don't know if you know who Larry Kuhn is, the NBA salary cap FAQ expert, Larry Kuhn.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I knew him, you know, before he got assimilated into the press, he was just one of us guys on chat rooms. And when he was writing that FAQ, I was one of the guys that he was had proofreading it and stuff like that. And I learned so much about salary caps in the late 90s from him that I was able to like translate it to the NHL some ways. And I think, you know, now the NBA has just blown it all apart when the two guys can eat up 90% of your cap.
Right.
But, you know, you got to think about guys that are going to become free agents or RFAs and how much they're going to ask for. And I think that that's what Blake did last year with Velarde. He decided to move him, fixed cost Dubois, Jersey was no longer a variable cost, and he got an asset that he can control for the next 8 years, and he's still going to be able to get Byfield, keep Byfield in the fold. So that's what I think happened. So
my only criticism of the Dubois trade, and like I said, I'm a fan, and I don't think people realize how important he is to the future of this team. He's here. He's not going anywhere. Yeah, so
I agree, 100%.
But, you know, I liken Dubois to the girlfriend who always cheats on you, or it could be a boyfriend if you're a female. I really think this is the perfect analogy for him. It's like I used to date a dancer, and I don't mean ballroom, if you know what I'm saying. And all her friends were like, Earl, she's going to cheat on you. It's just who she is. I'm like, she's not going to cheat on me. I'm Earl. I'm a great guy. And of course, she ended up cheating on me. And I think Dubois is like the girlfriend who, you know, the Kings were the new boyfriend who said, we're going to be the first team. He's not played defense in juniors, Columbus, Winnipeg. He's going to do it for us because we're the best opportunity for him to win a Stanley Cup right now. It ain't Montreal. They're not going to win a cup anytime soon. He's not going to cheat on us. And of course, you know, the first year was not good. So hopefully he figures it out because, you know, he's.
Yes.
You just said it. He has to because, you know, it's him and Byfield are going to be the torch carriers after Kopitar goes. It's just.
So is Fiala. Fiala's going to be there. I mean, they got a lot of guys locked in for long term. So, you know, this is the core going forward. I just, like I said, I'm down on Doughty. I still remember his tantrum against Chicago 7 years ago in that penalty box where Kings had a lead in the third period. And then he got a double minor and boom, next thing you know, we're losing that game and we're out of the playoffs. So, and then he's criticizing Velarde 5 years later for whining about time on ice. You know, I mean, where does he have the room to talk? So I'm ready. I'm done with Doughty. I really am.
No, I mean, I would say, listen, if you have to pick between Kopitar and Doughty in terms of who to, you know, at some point cut the cord, you know, my pick would be Doughty. And, you know, listen, he was a great player in the cup years, but, you know, at some point, you know, this is a brutal business. It's very much like stand-up comedy. Like at some point you got to like, you know, like
I get good.
Oh yeah, but I mean, but like,
he's not worth $11 million. He's not worth $11 million. Yeah. Look what they did to OEL Oliver Ekman Larson. They finally paid him off, and he went to Florida for what, $1 million, and now he's playing on a contender again. So, I think Doughty needs that same kind of wake up call.
Yeah, I mean, it just, you know, I think what leaves a sour taste in a lot of people's mouths is how they got rid of Quick. Not that they. You know, he wasn't playing well here. You know, a change was needed, but I don't like how they did it over the phone. Like, it should have been done face to face. You know, if you believe his side of the story, he was told he was staying. Now, who knows? But so I hope if they do something with Doughty, it's done with a little bit more. Hey, where do you want to go? Let's keep this quiet. We'll try our best. Don't go public with it, because then then we're, pardon my language, fucked, because everyone knows. So, you know, Blake is he gonna earn his money this year or this summer.
Well, the thing about Quick was he had a $5.8 million cap hit, but his actual salary was like $2.5 million. So it was looked really good for Columbus, because they didn't have to eat the whole salary. They only had to pay him $500,000 and give the Kings that much cap relief for a short period of time so they could fit a goalie and a defenseman in there. And that, you know, that was a salary cap gymnastic move.
Right.
And they had no choice if they wanted to be, and they did, they made the playoffs. I don't know. The goaltending was terrible last year. And so that helped the team. They improved after that trade. So now Quick's doing what he needs to do, play 16, 18 games behind a really good number one goalie. And, you know, keep himself in shape and rested and answer the call when he has to. So has he even played in the Stanley Cup playoffs? I don't think he has.
Yeah.
I think he's just there as an, you know, as an emergency. So,
I mean, he's not anymore. I was a Corpusalo fan. Like, I wouldn't have been bummed out if we signed him. Like,
yeah,
he didn't have a great year this year, but Jesus, Ottawa's pretty brutal defensively. But you know, he's there for the next 3 years. You're not getting rid of Corpusalo, Ottawa fans.
I was hoping they would get Stolarz, to be honest. Anthony Stolarz to me was the sleeper guy out there, and he's done pretty darn good for Florida this year, backing up Bobrovsky. So,
yeah, I mean, there's some options out there. Like, you know, you're gonna have to, you know, look at, you know, obviously a guy like Ullmark, or, you know, or you're gonna have to take a flyer on, you know, someone like a reclamation project like Knight. You know, I don't know what his long-term, you know, I know he's in the program.
He's in the AHL.
But, like, you know, that's a guy who probably with Bobrovsky and Stolarz there, you know, I don't think Portillo's the answer right now. He's certainly playing great, but I don't know if I'd feel comfortable with him as the number one. But, you know, it's, I mean, and if Roy and Arvidsson go, you know, Blake's got some decisions there. Do we bring in someone, or is it Thomas and Fagimo's time? Or so I think the draft day is going to be very interesting for the Kings. I think, like you said, there's going to be a lot of, I think, big trades and free agent signings this summer because of the cap going up and just teams needing different things. And Stefan, like,
it's still going to be tight. The $4 million is not enough for, I mean, for the lower teams, the teams that didn't make the playoffs that are under the cap. Yeah, they're going to be able to offer guys good money. And but for the teams in the playoffs right now who are all on LTIR, can't carry 23 guys, they still have gymnastics, another season of gymnastics to do to keep a good roster out there. So the flat cap has pushed everybody towards the mushy middle. It just has. I mean, that's what it's designed to do. The cap, salary cap, is designed to do that. A flat cap makes it even more that way. So.
And I think Utah is going to be a team to look out for. They got a lot of good young players and some cap room, because they don't really have like a crazy salary on the roster. So they are, you know, that's why the Kings got to not just keep up with the Edmontons. And, you know, Vegas is going to do some wacky maneuvering. You know, I know they burn a lot of bridges with fans and probably other teams' execs. But, you know, they're doing what every other team could do. They just seem to find a way to do it better. The Mark Stone medical miracles always happen right before the first round. But Stefan, this was very fun. I would love to do this again, maybe before or after the draft. Do you have anything you'd like to plug? Like, where can people find you online?
I'm on Twitter, Stephen Ferraccioli on Twitter. You can usually see me posting behind the mayor or other guys that haven't blocked me by now, but if you have an opinion about the Kings, I'll probably find it and I'll probably hit like, or I'll probably comment. So,
yeah, I know Stefan's one of the more knowledgeable King fans, and you know, there's a lot of good King fans on Twitter. I mean, of course, the mayor, John Hovind, Dennis Bernstein, I'm forgetting the other guys, the Jari the Hut.
Don't forget Trapper.
Yes, Trapper, who I was one of my longtime ball hockey enemies, but we joined forces toward the end of our illustrious ball hockey careers. So there's a lot of good King conversation. And go on letsgokings.com. I have no affiliation with that site, but it is a large gathering place for Los Angeles Kings talk. And Stefan will be, as the Rat song would say, we will be back for more. Thank you very much for doing this. And we'll talk to you on the Twitterverse.
Thanks, Earl.